Boom. Athletics High Performance Podcast. Providing you with the performance training, college scholarships, coaching education, and elite athletic development. Now, your host. Seth Boomsma.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Boom Athletics High Performance Podcast. Seth Boomsma here once again. Today we have a very special episode with actually our next door neighbor here at the gym, Shane Hennen of Hennen Workouts. I've known Shane for quite a while just through mutual connections and mutual athletes sending both of our ways, and now be able to have him as a next door neighbor and be able to pass athletes literally 10 feet away has been a game changer for not only him but also myself as well. In this podcast, we dive into a lot of basketball-related content in terms of skill development, AAU basketball, and really how to design a program for a developing basketball player. I think this is a really good podcast for young athletes and coaches to listen to. And without further ado, let's dive into this podcast with Shane.
Thanks, Shane, for being on the podcast with me today.
Yes, sir. Let's do this.
So a lot of people want to know who Shane Hennen is. Why don't you give a background of who you are?
Okay. I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, like 300 people. Went to a school, small class A school, which is like probably a B school out here. Did that, had a good 4 year, or a couple years in high school, and then went to, was lucky enough to get a scholarship to a small NAIA, Morningside in Sioux City. Played 4 years there, was a part of very good teams as a role player specifically. Went to a couple national tournaments, good experience, very challenging, especially coming from a small town and not really knowing what that work level was like. So learned a ton there, and then after that moved up to Sioux Falls, had some family in town, and started coaching some AAU stuff. Picked up on some of the training, had like a normal job, but then stepped away from my marketing job and went more, you know, all into the basketball stuff and trying to grow an academy and learning how to do camps and just basically putting, you know, all my efforts into the basketball industry and just trying to figure out which direction I wanted to go. So I did that for a while, did the AAU scene for a while, and then ended up starting my own training business. Did that for a little bit, and then took a job at the Sanford Pentagon, ran that academy for a little bit, and now we're back running our own business right next door to Boom Athletics.
Yes, sir. So, basketball, has it always been your sport ever since you were a kid, or did you play other sports growing up?
Yeah, I played, I love football. That was my favorite thing because I was a big Vikings fan, big like Randy Moss, Chris Carter, like that whole era was like how I grew up. Mm-hmm. And had two older brothers, so it was always just like running routes in the basement or like outside, you know how that goes. And I played a lot of baseball and I played a ton of basketball. I love basketball just because it was really fast paced. And when you're young, I feel like if you're good at something and, or if you have some sort of success, like you just really want to keep doing it. So like I have very vivid memories of like fifth grade basketball or fourth grade basketball, like stealing a pass and like getting layups. That was like my favorite thing to do just because I could score and I could get the ball. And that honestly really helped me just being, you know, somewhat athletic at a young age, and then you know, you have some success, you want to keep playing. So I played all three sports, and then in high school somebody had told me that there was a fall league in Minneapolis, like you could go up there with a team from wherever and just basically play against like very high level people. So after my freshman year, I actually stopped playing football, and in the fall, and this is kind of when I was getting more serious with basketball stuff, I went up and played fall league every weekend until basketball season. Mm-hmm. And then played basketball and then played baseball. But I remember just from a small town, just like a lot of people around here are, it's like if you quit a sport, like people are really up in arms about it. Like, and I was a good football player and I could catch and I could run. I wasn't very big like at all. So I do remember playing football and like remembering like, God, I hate practice. Like I hate getting hit. My head hurts. You know, these guys are just like, it's such a physical sport. Especially in like small town football, it's like the physical people win. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I wasn't good at it. It was just like, you know, I'm looking at my time and I'm like, okay, if I could go play against like, you know, class 4A, 5A kids, you know, for weeks before the season, I'm going to have a very successful season, I feel like. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, I was still involved with some of the football stuff. I helped do the stats, and just because I loved the game and had really good friends on there. But that was one of the harder decisions, was like going from a three sport to a two sport guy. Mm-hmm. And then playing baseball, like, I loved baseball and I was good at it. But it, outside of just being good, it was more of just like a mental break of like, you know, you do the fall league and you do the, you know, the full basketball season, and you're one of the good players. So there's, it's not stress, but there's pressure, and you have to perform, and you're trying to, like, you know, improve every year. So this, that season was like, you have to be really locked in. And when it came to baseball, like, the weather was nice, you know, and we just had a long season, and, you know, maybe we ended it with a tough loss and ended our season or something. But baseball was always like that one season where I could just like relax, be with my friends, and stuff like that. So I love baseball, but during baseball I was also doing travel ball and moving around like that. So mm-hmm. I love all sports, still do, very competitive, and just love to play whatever. So
yeah. So when did you kind of know, I know you said you went into marketing a little bit.
Yeah.
When did you know you wanted to be a skills trainer?
Oh man, I didn't know at all. I just, like, when I got out of college, I had a degree in mass communications and marketing, which really doesn't mean a whole lot. Like, you just, I just remember like being happy that I found a job. Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking in the Sioux Falls area, and there was a person that had a marketing agency, and she just needed some like assistant help. And I was like, I don't know, I just will try this, basically. And I did some internships, but it didn't give me any sort of feel of like, this is what you'll do for a career. Mm-hmm. It was more like, just do this while you're playing a sport. So I did that. And then I was helping at Bartlett Basketball Academy. And when I did that, I was just like coaching a fourth grade team. And I love that because these little kids are just so pumped. And like, they, if you're young and you're working with kids, these kids just like latch on to you. They're like, you know, they think you're their best friend, and like, it's, mm-hmm. it's fun. So, and some of those kids are juniors now, and I'm still working with them, which is really cool. But when I got into the basketball world and started coaching, there was requests for like workouts and stuff. And I was like, look, I have no idea how to do that, but I'll just try. So a lot of those like fourth graders were kind of my little guinea pigs. And, we just did whatever I could YouTube, like two ball stuff, just like, if you look back at it, and this is what a lot of trainers say, but you look back at it and it was bad, but we were working. So like, you know, regardless of what we're doing, we were in the gym, we were committed. So you're picking up a lot of good habits. But as far as like the on-court stuff, I didn't know what I was doing. And then after that, you know, my business, or the business I was working for, got bought out by a bigger agency. And they basically said, hey, you can apply for this business, or, you know, you can find a different job, whatever. And they were going to hire me. I just had to pick a job to apply for. And I was like looking at it, and I was like, this is, at that point I had spent like 4 or 6 months doing it. And I was like, it's just so boring. Like, I feel like I'm not really doing anything that in a day, like I'm spending 6 to 8 hours just kind of sitting around. Mm-hmm. And then, and I didn't know anything about being an entrepreneur. I didn't know anything about owning a business. I just knew that like, this can't be like what people do all day. And I just wasn't comfortable with it. So I approached the owner of Bartlett Basketball Academy and basically just said like, hey, I have a background in marketing. I know you guys are doing well. Maybe I could, give me some office hours and I could help you with some sort of marketing or help you grow the business in ways that you, you know, see fit. And he was down for it. He gave me some office hours. It wasn't a lot. I wasn't making a ton of money by any means, but I was like fresh out of college and had no expenses. And outside of just rent and stuff like that. But did that, kind of loved the basketball stuff. And then that's when Instagram like came out with the little 15-second videos. And when that hit, I was like really quick to hop on there and just throw like edits and throw workouts. And then that started picking up so much like traction. Like, kids just like love to see themselves. And I was like, it was like the first time you could do something like that on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And all these kids were really into the social media stuff, obviously. And that really kind of like catapulted some sort of confidence, but also just like this mesh between that marketing background and also the sport that I loved. And then that's also when the training stuff came in. So like, once I found out like, okay, this is a cool way to market myself, and it has a lot to do with basketball, I was like, maybe I should look at this training thing as like a real thing. And that's kind of when that clicked, I would say like 2016-17. Mm-hmm. And then I just went all in. Like, I was obsessed with researching other trainers, figuring out like, what are they doing? How do I grow to that level? Like, I just was all in at that point, which is kind of my personality. So that was kind of that that point, I did a couple months of this basketball stuff and then had a little confidence boost and had some kids that were like, dude, I want to work out with you. And I was like, all right, like maybe I need to figure out how to actually do this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was kind of that point.
Right. We'll circle back to the social media, yeah. But who were some of your mentors and influencers during that time?
Yeah.
Because it, like you said, you're just kind of picking up everything from yeah. YouTube.
Yeah. It was like anybody you could reach out to, but like the owner of BBA, Terry Bartlett, was a good mentor just on like the business side and how he got started. And local people like my dad, like my parents, it's funny, like they looked at this like, all right, Shane, you got to get a different job. And like, so like going to my parents about stuff wasn't really, I mean, it was an option, but it wasn't going to be useful for me. So I had to like, honestly, I didn't have a single person that I knew. It was all like YouTubing and just searching people. So like Drew Hanlon is a guy that owns Pure Sweat. He's a basketball trainer and owns that. But he was a guy that I was just like, I really, because he was the only one at that time pumping stuff out that trainers could learn from. He had like a teaching trainers how to train, basically.
Right.
And now that's a big business, but Drew was kind of the first one. So when I learned that, and I just was all in on Drew, I found other trainers that were pumping out stuff. Those were my mentors. It was like self-research. And that doesn't mean that's the best thing, but I didn't find a mentor until I would say like 2018. And Reed Osi, he's up in the cities. He's another trainer that is, you know, what I think is one of the best ever. He's like a 7-year college coach, and then he became a trainer. He spent time with DJ Sackman. Like, he has his own business. He's got pros, kids, whatever. When I had met him, he flipped everything for me. Like, he really turned everything around and was like, this is how you do this. This is how I do this at a high level. You know, he taught me about the terminology in basketball and how to train people on court, but then also talked to me about, you know, business stuff. So mentors early were YouTube and just other trainers that I didn't honestly know. And then I met Reed and it turned everything around.
Right. So I think that kind of is a good question here next is like, there seems to be a little bit of a gap between skills trainers and kind of like your high school coaches or middle school coaches. You know, what is that gap for you and that you've kind of seen, and how can we bridge that gap?
Yeah, I think it's just because the basketball, you know, industry has grown, like there's a lot of people making money on it, and that doesn't always mean that's the best, because I think, you know, you look at a high school coach and a lot of them are doing it because they're a teacher and they love the game. And like the high school coach isn't making a ton of money just being a high school coach, right? He's making his salary on being a teacher or whatever job he has. Mm-hmm. So then you see other people like making a ton of money. And this isn't for every high school coach, but you see other trainers making a ton of money doing these camps. And, you know, maybe these camps aren't, you know, they're looking at it as like a peer basketball perspective. They look at these camps, there's 100 kids and none of them are getting better because it's just too many kids. I think there's just like a lot of bad, you know, habits in the basketball training world that I think coaches are seeing. And like, dude, it's obvious there's a lot of people just trying to make a buck. And I think people, the coaches specifically, get annoyed by that. And it's not real. You know, it's just kind of like people trying to make money just like on anything else.
Right.
I think that's part of it. And I also think, you know, from a coaching perspective, they're worried about team stuff. So 5-on-5, how do their defense rotate? How do they, you know, run their sets? Stuff like that. They want things that incorporate the whole team. When you're doing training, you're more individualized and you're working on, you know, small groups of people or a single person. And that doesn't always mesh well either, because sometimes it has nothing to do with their team. Sometimes it's just about the individual. Now, good trainers kind of can incorporate a little bit of both, but I think that's another thing. Just the work that's actually being done, and does it translate well to their actual team that they have to play on? So I think those are two major issues, but I also think, you know, the way to help that is just to have conversations, whether that's in person or on social or over a phone call or whatever. Just like talking to coaches, be like, look, this is where I'm coming from. This is how I teach. You know, I'm open to learning more things. Like, what's your perspective? And that's one of the biggest things I've been trying to do over the last couple of years is like, not only talking to these coaches, like, look, I don't know everything. You know, I don't know how to be a high school coach. Your job is not to be a trainer. My job is not to be a high school coach. We got to mesh together somehow. Mm-hmm. And the best coaches I know accept that. And they like really lean on a good trainer, a good skill guy to come to their camps or just to give them advice on how to do off-season stuff. And then they take that and grow it into their, you know, their program. And I had a conversation with a high school coach recently, and he's like, look, I don't know how to do this skill stuff. And I was like, Coach, I don't know how to run a practice. I don't, you know, I mean, I could, but I'm like, I don't know how to run a team through a full year. I don't know anything about that. And he's like, yeah, we get each other. And I was like, this is the coolest conversation I ever had with a coach, because he understand where I was coming from and I understood where he was coming from. Mm-hmm. I think if you can just have those conversations, like if you're a young trainer, if you can just have conversations like that with local coaches, you'll gain a lot of respect. Mm-hmm. So that would be my suggestion. But there's probably some other stuff you could do too.
Right. So going back to social media, you come from a marketing background. I think those beginners in the skills training world might criticize you for different things you do on social media.
Yeah.
So what, and I know you're a big details guy. You and I think the same way. We're details. We had Kelton and Oliver Vincent on the podcast here recently, and they talked about how much you have helped them with footwork.
Yes.
Yep. And how important those details were with that. So why don't you touch on that and why you're doing the stuff that you're doing
on social? Yeah, I think that is the biggest separator for me, and that's part of what I learned with Reed Osi was, like, once I learned the terminology, as in, like, okay, when this foot moves here and you stop like this, that's this term, or when you hesitate like this, that's this term. I can now give these kids details, whereas, like, if I had Ollie at the top of the key and I said, hey, Ollie, I want you to get it in your right hand, pull the ball out of your pocket, put your, you know, opposite foot back, your ball side foot forward, and drop your hips. I could say like a full three sentences, or I could say, Ollie, get to your drop, and he'll know what a drop stance is. So I can, it's like way more efficient for me. Mm-hmm. And then the kids, they latch onto these terms, and then they see these pros playing or the college players, and they're like, Shane, that guy got to an under drag, then he did a foot switch. Like, they can study the game so much easier. I think if you look at like film of Kobe, you'd be like, okay, I love that. I don't know how he did it. But now if you know the terms, I'm like, okay, I see what this foot did. Then I see the timing of the ball. Like, the terminology and the detail is like one of the biggest separators when it came to my training business, because anybody can, like my Uncle Joe back home at the farm could run me through pin downs. Like, he said, hey, come off the screen, I'll kick it to you, hit the three. Like, anybody can do that. Mm-hmm. And it's not beneficial. It's just like, if there's more to give to the athlete to empower them to know more about their game and their feet and their body and how things are done, that's what you need to do. And these kids want that. That's like mm-hmm. something I'm always preaching on socials. Like, these kids want details. You know, I think I've seen camps before where like somebody will be having them do some sort of crossover, some sort of action, and the kid be like, where do I put this foot? And the guy's like, just go, just do it. Like, just do it faster. And like, there's no, you know, they don't know. So I think when kids ask me questions about footwork, I have the answers. And there's some stuff that maybe I don't, but it's, that's been the biggest thing. And then just getting rid of the fluff, like doing, and this is something that I think you do really well too, is like, we're not doing anything that doesn't have a purpose. And we always ask the question, like, what does this really mean? And like, why, what is the actual, the purpose of doing this? Like, you know, an example would be like a mic and drill, you know, underneath the hoop doing mic and. I'm like, okay, that's a good thing to do, but is there a better way to do this? Like, you know, asking those questions about some old traditions and not just going with the tradition, I think is something that a lot of trainers need to do better. So that's kind of my mindset, is like a lot of detail, you know, no fluff. And no fluff doesn't mean like we're not going to do stuff out of your realm and out of your ability. We still might do that, and that might not translate right away, but there still is a purpose for doing that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but like that's the biggest thing, is the detail stuff. And Ollie and Kelton are great examples of kids that latched onto that. Mm-hmm. And like, they're good players. They didn't need me to be good players by any means, like, especially Ollie. Like, the dude just skilled out of his mind. But if I can give Ollie some tools, and now he's like a self-educator, like he could run his own workout based on what he saw on film or something. He wouldn't need me at all, which is like very cool feeling to me. Same thing with Kelton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You said it, no fluff. That's the very first thing I learned with athletic performance training from my mentor, Alan Bartsch, was no fluff. If I can't give you the reason why we're doing something, then why are we doing it?
We shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly. And that's something too that we've really seen with our athletes. If we just use Ollie, for example, just like in vertical jump technique, it's the details that win. It's the details that get him the 40 inches.
100%.
And that's what I love about you. And I think that's where we really see eye to eye.
Yep.
So now getting kind of to the negative, I guess, is what's the most misunderstood concept
in the training stuff? Oh man, I think people see stuff, and this is kind of a tricky thing, because at this point, you can make money on social media. Like, they will pay you to post things, whether it's a business or whether it's the actual platform paying you. So there's a difference between having a post that I think is for, you know, driving views or bring up a topic or whatever it is for business. And then there's this, an educational post. I think one of the biggest, you know, misunderstandings is like if somebody sees a video clip and they're like, oh my God, like what are they just doing stuff off the dribble? Like, or like if guys are in here jumping, like, oh, do the only thing they do is go jump on the thing and touch the thing. And I would walk in here and be like, I see Ollie doing all sorts of exercises. And then maybe that's the last thing he does or whatever. Maybe that's the test day thing. I think the biggest misconception is like they see a clip and then they, you know, make an assumption. Like that's what the work is. But, you know, if you, even if you look at my stuff, you see a lot of skill work and a lot of footwork. But if you were to come in here, that's like maybe 20, 30 minutes of stuff. And then we play a lot of situational live stuff and put some of that stuff to the test, which is doesn't always do as well, perform as well on social media. So it doesn't make sense to post it. Or you'll see some kids that come to my gym and they're not very good. And we have to start at ground zero. And that stuff doesn't always get seen. So I think some of the social media stuff is kind of misunderstood. I think, you know, there's an old tradition of training basketball, and it's how I grew up. Trust me, and I benefited from it, but I also was held back by it. And, you know, the only thing I knew how to do was shoot. And when I went to the gym, I was like, I don't know any drills, so I'm just going to shoot. And that is something that I did really well. But when I got to college, I was capped. Like, there wasn't, you know, that's why I became a role player. There wasn't, like, a whole lot other that I was capable of doing at that level. I think that's a misconception of just like, you know, just do this hard work and, you know, have established yourself as a role player early on and just grow in that role. It's like, no, when you're young, don't have a position, be well-rounded, be skilled. And then when you get to that stage where you're like, you're on a higher level team, that's when you should establish that role because you could hold yourself back and there's more that you're capable of doing. And I think some people, you know, like instance in South Dakota, like you got 6'3 centers out here. Mm-hmm. You can't play a 6'3 center in college. Like you're going to have to be a wing, but they don't do that. They're just looking at what this is in high school. So I think that's kind of a little bit of a misconception here. I think just the traditional way of training and, you know, challenging that without, you know, having any fluff, I think is kind of the strategy to go. So there's a lot of misconceptions in the basketball world, especially the training stuff, but you know, it doesn't help that this industry is growing, just like probably your guys's is. And there's a lot of bad out there. And I think people see a lot of bad and they assume that most of it is bad then. And it's tough to be like, no, that's not what I do. That's not, you know, not everything here is bad at all. You know, we train a little bit different. So getting past that is a challenge for sure.
Right. So like really leads me to my next question is like, how do you program for each athlete and group really?
Yeah, I think most of my kids are high school athletes, so it's more of a well-rounded training style where it's like we preach a lot of foot control. So whether you play a point guard, a center, a wing, whether you're setting screens, coming off of screens, whether you're a finisher or a shooter, footwork is your foundation to everything. So if your brain can create that connection to your feet and demand your feet to move in a certain way, you will be successful at any position. So there's some stuff that everybody has to go through, like almost like a checklist. Like, can you move this way with the ball? Can you time the dribble with this? Because that's going to pay off regardless of the position. So I'll have bigs, you know, playing on the perimeter off the dribble, and I'll have guards playing in the post. And it benefits everybody. That's like one style. But then you also have like kids like Ollie that are at an elite level. And then you look at them like, all right, Ollie, you know, we can sit here and I can say, hey, go drop, you know, drag into a pull. Like I could tell you what to do all the time if you want. You're just not going to get that much better at this point. So you get these groups of high level players. And instead of telling them what to do, you give them some sort of reaction training or you say, hey, I want you to script this here. You're going to start in a jab. And then you're attacking middle, help side slides up. You show him, give me 10 options, right? And then he'll fly through it. So I think programming when they get a little bit better and more skilled is more like, okay, you have the skill. Let's make good choices and let's be consistent with some of these shots. And that's something actually with Ollie we had talked about was like, you could get to anything in the world with a ball in your hand. Now it's like, what are our best options? Is it a pull-up? Is it a floater? Is it something off the, you know, two dribbles, or can you get there in one? Like we have to have those conversations a little bit, but it's not always easy when you work with groups because some people are in different situations, but I think if you have high level players, you put them, you know, in one-on-one situations, two-on-two, and you just learn how to play basketball, but also use that skill work you use. But there's a lot of foundation kids that still need a lot of the footwork and detail training before they can get there.
Right. Yeah. So being a detailed coach myself, like I know even if an athlete signs up for a group, I know I always have to pull them aside.
Yes.
And basically yep. take them through like a giant intro session of using that's like difficult. My terminology and kind of teaching them the basics.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we're not doing much today. I'm like, well, because if you just try to fly with this.
Yeah, you're not there yet. Yeah.
Do you see the same thing?
100%. And it's like, even like, let's say, and I keep using Ollie, but let's say we had a different kid, like Talon Ashley, right? Mm-hmm. Talon knows all the terminology. He's very skilled. But then we have another kid that's the same age as Talon, but hasn't trained with us. He's not going to do the same stuff as Talon because he doesn't know that stuff. So I have to like go over to him and be like, okay, here's what a punch drag is. Talon, I know you know this. You just keep getting your reps. Let me get this kid over here. And then he'll start repping it a little bit. But it does, like, it takes time. Unless you have them in an individual setting, which isn't always happening, it does, you got to step aside and help them out. But most of my kids, like I said, are pretty educated that they can be like, hey, no, you need to stop on that foot. And they'll actually do some of the teaching for me, which is awesome. But yeah, it's a struggle, you know, if they haven't been working with you, because they want to be like, hey, I want to do what Talon's doing. And you're like, dude, right. Not yet.
Yeah, 100%. And I know we keep talking about Ollie here, but obviously he's one of our best athletes, you know,
yeah.
that goes to us mutually. I think a lot of people look at what we do with Ollie on social media, whether it's on the K-Box or jumps or whatever. Yep. Well, why am I not doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, this guy does 24/7 training. I know 100%. He's doing 100% of the time. Like, you're not ready for that yet.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is, like, you look at Ollie, and Ollie's in Sioux Valley getting a million shots up. So when he comes here, like, we don't have to get a million shots up. But this other kid, like, dude, you don't have access to a gym. Like, you need to shoot the ball. Ollie's going to go do this by himself, or this person, Hannah Ronzik, is going to do this by herself at her own gym. Like, it's just the group stuff sometimes gets difficult because everybody has different needs. But I think if you can come up with a program that, like I said, is a little bit more well, and not you, but like other people,
mm-hmm.
if you can come up with a program that's more well-rounded, that, you know, teaches skill work in a way that doesn't matter what position, that's the best way to go. But then you have to be specific with your groups as they get older and putting the right people in the right place. And, you know, with all that, you're going to want to put him, or guys like that, you're going to want to put him against kids that, you know, are better than him
mm-hmm.
most of the time. But then you want to make sure that he's not always going against kids that are better than him. You want to make sure he's going against kids that are equal with him or a little bit less, so we can try new things and grow that way. I think having a balance of both is huge.
Right. So we touch on a lot of these high school and youth athletes. You also work with a professional, Reed Travis.
Yep.
What was his training like this offseason? Because I know he's having a great season
right now.
Yeah. What was his training like?
So Reed is and you can appreciate this. Reed was like he was a McDonald's All-American, went to Stanford, and went to Kentucky. They played him as a center, like this big bruiser. So like if you get a big bruiser like that, they play like flat and wide off their feet because they're always trying to like brace themselves up and getting hit. But Reed is no longer this bruiser. He's I think like 6'8 or 6'9. So he's not like if he's going to play in the league, he's not going to be a center,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he's athletic, but he's, you know, he's not like going to be a 7-foot center that just catches lobs 24/7. So we had to look at him like, okay, we need to switch our positions here a little bit. Like, you need to be a stretch four that's skilled, that can shoot. And that required him being on his toes more and not being so wide and being shifty. So the first year I had him was like, all we did, and this is crazy because he played at one of the highest, you know, level of schools in Kentucky. We had to do the same stuff that I would put a high school kid through as far as like teaching him, like, this is what a drop is. This is the foundation to everything. This is this. And just educate him just like everybody else and making him more confident in his skill, getting to things that he was never able to get to. That was year one, was laying this foundation. And we shot a lot of shots. So he would come in, you know, twice a day. In the second half, he'd shoot like 300 makes or 400. It was just outrageous. Year two, which was last, I think it was last year. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Anyways, this last off season was all shooting. So we laid that foundation. He becomes more shifty. Now he's doing stuff off the bounce. He's attacking from the perimeter. He's playing different. Now it's like, all right, we want to make the league. We want, or, you know, if we don't make the league, we want to be a very high paid overseas player. And they both kind of require the same thing. You have to be a high-level shooter, and then you got to be great at a couple things. This is kind of where that role kind of comes in, where the training changes. No longer like all these things. It's like you pick two or three things. So the one thing that we picked, obviously, was shooting. And that's where we saw the biggest growth this year. He's already made more threes than he made last year. He's shooting a higher percentage. And it's not only the numbers, it's just like a confidence thing. Like he's willing to do things. Like last year he was willing to shoot, but if somebody's closing out, he's probably not going to shoot it. This year it doesn't mean he's pulling it no matter what, which was like the biggest change was this mentality of like, now I'm a shooter, and accepting that because it's hard to just develop that. So Reed has been a blast for me. He's the hardest worker I know, great human being, very honest, doesn't like, he's a homebody like me, doesn't want to do anything but work out and then go and chill and eat and watch Netflix, right? So him and I mesh very well, and he loves the detail. He loves, you know, just like most good players, they love that detail stuff. So he at this point is more I would say, you know, focus on a couple things each off season, and this off season is going to be exciting. We're going to do a little bit more live play stuff now that we've laid the foundation for skill and the shooting mechanics are there. Now it's like, all right, let's make shots with somebody on us constantly and be comfortable with that. That's going to be our biggest step this summer.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned to me before about how Reed is probably your most dedicated athlete.
Yeah, 100%.
That you've worked with. But I also know you're a very dedicated skills trainer, because I know I can pull up here every single time.
Yeah, we're both here.
We're here all the time, like nonstop. So, what is a typical daily routine for you? Because I know you grind every single second.
I think I have to get a lot of sleep, otherwise it doesn't work for me. So I'm not a guy, to be honest, that like wakes up super early. I actually wake up at like a normal like 8 o'clock, and I start slow, and I drink my tea or my my NG Nutri, my Red Zinc. Like I have a good start. I want to make sure that I can just wake up, feel like I got rest, and not be rushing and have a good start. So that's the typical morning routine, is like get up, you know, eat a good meal, relax, figure out what my day looks like, figure out what tomorrow looks like, things like that. And then in the morning, especially now when kids are in school, it's filming a bunch of stuff for social, or putting effort to an app or putting effort to some other part of the business that isn't on court. And then I'm still working myself out a couple times a week as a basketball player, just because it just helps me, man. It gives me perspective of what people are going through. I still love to play. Like if anybody had a men's league, I'm proud. Like I played last night for some random team. He just texted me. I was like, all right, man, I'm like a men's league free agent. Like if anybody needs my services, I'll go play, just because it's hard for me to turn out to play because I love playing. So I think a typical routine is wake up around 8, get a good meal, relax, and then get ready to film for like 2 hours. Do that. And then go back home, get a good meal, and then I'll work myself out before my like right before this. Cole and I were doing like a new workout. We're trying Pilates, which is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Doing that, and then you know we have sessions throughout the night. So that's kind of a routine for me.
Right. I know you mentioned NG Nutra in there. We're both partnered with NG Nutra.
Yeah.
What's your favorite product?
Favorite product is TB16 because I need that caffeine boost. I like the reds and greens because I just feel good after I drink that. And plant protein, I feel good after I drink that. So reds, greens, plant protein, and the TB for the caffeine boost. And honestly, I'm not saying this because we're sponsored, but I'm saying this because the TB is actually one of my favorite. Like it actually gives me a legit boost that lasts a while, which is I think what everybody says about caffeine products, but this is like legit for me. So
yeah, and I know you were a caffeine drinker in the past just like me.
I don't know how, like when we were pulling those days, like slamming rains or like you know, not anymore, but bangs and like things like that. At least I can mix the TB with some water and like have a nice, you know, drink of water. But
and I found too, I'm not sure about you, but like the TB is just like much more of a clean focus energy. Like when I would drink some of those energy drinks, I would just be downing it just to down it because it would give me caffeine, but I didn't actually like feel much different.
No, and I always felt kind of crummy too. Like I'd fall and then I'd be really hungry and then I just like it wasn't consistent. This is like a more consistent, smoother feel for that stuff. But
highest caffeine intake you've ever had in a day?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so it had to be like 2 summers ago, pulling like 8 to 8. I would say, how many milligrams are in a rain?
What is it,
300? 300? Dude, at least 2.5 rains.
Yeah.
I think maybe 3. I think there's probably one day I pulled 3 off and I was like, dude, Shane, this is an issue. Right. You can't. Right. And I think maybe it was like just a crazy day that day. But honestly, that's one of my issues is like, I feel like sometimes I'm scheduling for somebody else. Like, yeah, we'll do it. And then I get to that day, I'm like, dude, you scheduled 6 back-to-backs? Like, what are you doing?
I was the same way. And we'll kind of get to how we know each other. But I know, like, I'm the same way. Like, I'm a grinder.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do anything for the athletes. And like you just said, like, scheduling back-to-backs. Like, I remember summer of 2020. Oh, man. It was like 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. every single day. Like, my
that was
breaks,
the COVID summer, right?
Yeah.
Dude.
And my breaks would just be, like, driving to, like, a football field or a track. Mm-hmm. Like, 15 minutes there, hour session, 15 minutes back. So that's when I would, like, eat quick. I would down energy drinks. Like, it was ridiculous.
Did you have to, like, why did you... After that summer, I was like, look, I am not in shape. You know, I was taking all these energy. I wasn't working out. Mm-hmm. I was just like, and maybe I would, like, for 10 minutes after. But when you get done, you're like, I'm tired, bro. Like, exactly. I need to go eat food. And literally, I need to go to sleep because I got to wake up tomorrow and do it again.
I was the exact same way. People would always be like, Seth, do you still work out? Like, I don't have time. When, if I want to make the time,
I'm trying to get better at that,
man. I'm already in the gym for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to leave my workplace.
Bro, that's the same thing in there. Like, if I had a gym where I had a bunch of windows and I could see life, I'd probably feel better. But this is like, these are, you know, warehouses, which I think is like, honestly, you look at it, it's like, if you are a hooper or like a guy that's really into your stuff, like, this is like the spot to be, because this is all it is.
Yeah.
There's nothing else here. There's no other programs. There's no AU. There's not. It's literally a warehouse, no windows, hoops, and you got to work. That's it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. When you get done, you're like, get me out of here, bro. Let me go home. I love this gym, but I can't be here anymore. Uh-huh. But I'm trying to be better. I think if you're starting your business, though, like, not starting, but if you're trying to grow it, man, you got to make some sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, sometimes personal health, sleep, you know, time with others, or just like chill time, like Netflix and stuff, right, or whatever. I have to try to be better at that, but I'm not really, you know, I don't have kids or anything like that, but I know in the future that's got to be a habit that I need to get better at,
mm-hmm,
or stuff.
And I think you just said it right there. It's like, a lot of people look at what you have now and they're like, well, I want that.
Oh my God,
are you,
dude,
willing to put in,
I have that conversation with so many, dude,
in order to get started. Most people aren't. And
no,
a lot of people are like, you know, they'd rather just yell, mm-hmm, and not coach any details for 1 hour camp a day,
yep,
rather than actually be in the grind.
You think about influence. Yeah, you think about influence. Like, you look at the kids that come through this, your place, and the influence you have on them is like, it's crazy, because it's a consistent thing. And you're not only are you talking to them in the gym, but you're at their games, you're talking to them after performances, you're like, you're really part of the journey, which is a whole different thing. I like to do camps because I can, you know, reach more people and give inspiration and teach new things. But like, I don't ever feel like, okay, Shane, you really changed how this is going to go. You might have changed like one or two kids that are really about it, but you know, it's a different thing when you're consistently doing that, but it's not easy. And I have that conversation a lot, because I have people that reach out to me as trainers. I'm like, dude, you know what? I started 5 years ago with fourth graders, and that's all I did. And I didn't know anything. And I had to just do this constantly because I knew this is what I loved. And I had no idea what it would turn into, but you just have to do that for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I'm still doing a lot of that same stuff. And I'm not where, you know, my end goal is. I'm on a good path, but it's like, it is a grind, and it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
Even getting this gym, man, like, you know this.
Right.
Getting into a space like this, I was like, thank God, man. This is, I didn't even know this was possible, but now we're like, all right, we need something bigger. Mm-hmm. We're on to the next, something like that. So, you know, people, when I got in that gym, they're like, dude, how did you pull this off? I'm like, well, it took me 5 years. And it, you know, maybe I could have done it earlier, but this is when I got it done, and this is the process. And it starts with trust of people.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about the grind. What's the thing you love most about what you're doing right now?
Just being with the kids, honestly. Like, when the kids come in and you see them and you can yell their name, like, what's up, man? How we doing? That stuff is so fun to me. These kids are just hilarious to me. Like, they're talking about like TikTok and these video games. I'm like, dude, this is so fun. It's just like, it reminds you when you were younger, you know, how you were. And I think I find myself like saying these old terms that my coach is probably yelling at me. And I'm like, dude, Shane, you gotta remember yourself being a kid. So seeing these kids and just like hearing stories of their day and, you know, seeing them like, seeing like a Taylan Ashley and an Ollie Vincent come together and like be able to, you know, dap each other up and say what's up and then work out. That's really cool to me because it's not something I had. I never, you know, my competition was competition. I wasn't trying to work out with them, but these guys can like go work out and then go compete, which is something I kind of wish I was able to do when I was younger, just because there's other good players in my area that I wasn't able to connect with. So that's a cool part. And honestly, I just love the business side. I love growing. I love posting stuff on social and growing that way. I just love new challenges and, you know, like right now trying to find a bigger space or what's next. Like it's a challenge, but it's also kind of a fun part, you know? And then, yeah, just trying to remind yourself, like this is probably the most fun part, like going through this. And like when you get older and you got to step away, you're like, damn, I wish I would have like really enjoyed it a little bit more instead of been so stressed. So I'm trying to remind myself of those things.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people, when they saw you move next door, were a little shocked.
Yep.
How do we know each other? And so we can kind of give our audience a little bit of a background.
Okay. So I worked at the Pentagon and had a great 1.5 years there, built good things. And I still have, you know, Taylor Fechner's there, was my really good friend. He's just doing a great job still there. So I'm happy with how that went, but it was time for me to step away and it was time for me to do my thing. And I think honestly, when I thought about doing my own thing, I was like, okay, you know, you're not going to be with a program because you don't want to be. Mm-hmm. Is there somebody that you can, if not partner with, be somewhat close to? And I had noticed your stuff for years, obviously, because you were doing a good job. And a lot of our athletes were already, whether I was at the Pentagon or doing my own thing, they were working with you regardless. So obviously we knew of each other, but I think after I got done with the Pentagon and started my business, we had instantly like sat down and just had a meeting and just talked, not talked about like so much business, but talking about like, okay, this is, you know, this is what I do. What do you do? Or this is my, and just like having somebody else in my area that was just as dedicated in an industry was like such a big relief to me, because it was like somebody you can relate to and just like talk to. I think there's a lot of people that are wanting to help, but there's really, I couldn't find anybody that was like really about it, like was really in it for the exact same reasons I was and trying to grow just like me. And you were instantly one of those people that was just like that. So just having you next door is huge. But, yeah, a lot of our athletes work together.
Right.
So that's like the first part.
And I think, that's kind of how we always knew of each other, but we've never met until the summer. So it was kind of like one of those things where it was just a mutual respect. It was just like, all right, yeah, who do I train with basketball wise? Yeah. Just go to Shane Hennon.
Yeah.
You know, like who do I train athletic performance training? Yeah. Just,
I know.
You know, and like, that's just kind of where we established. So we just had like, it was always, you know, get on interstate, go here,
go to the opposite side of town. And honestly, I would talk to kids and I'd be like, what'd you do? And they're like, well, we're at Boom. And I'm like, oh, and I kept hearing like, okay, we're here at Boom, we're at Boom. I was like, dude, these kids love this thing, man. Like they're really going here and they're coming back to me with a smile on their face. Like they feel like they're invested in their body, which I think is huge. Mm-hmm. These kids are like if I had that in high school, I might have liked lifting weights and like been more prepared and like more educated, because I feel like you do a good job of that. I think these kids, they go, and I'm not trying to throw any shade at anybody, but they go through some workout programs or lifting programs and it's not that feeling. It's not like I feel like me, Shane Hennon, knows more about my body. I just feel like I lifted a bunch of weights. Mm-hmm. Whereas here is like, you get to know your body. You get to be tested. You get to, like all these things. It's like, that's an effort thing. And I think that you do a good job of like, even just testing these athletes and giving them numbers. Not everybody's willing just to like take down the numbers and like keep track. Like that's an effort thing. And I think that's what these, in amongst other things, that's what these kids would come back to me and smile and be like, look, I jumped this much higher. And I'm like, bro, that's dope. I don't know anything about it, but I'm happy that you're happy, like getting stronger and more athletic. That was, you know, you just rarely hear that in kids that are pumped to be more athletic. So that was the biggest thing, just hearing stories about what you guys were doing and then having kids that, you know, were in the same programs.
Right. So I think this is a good question from me to you is like, what do you see these players really need to work on athletically in order for their transfer to the game to actually...
Oh, that's such a good question. Honestly, I think if they're just more capable, you know, like just kind of how I talked about some of the basketball stuff, like just more capable to move in any direction, not specifically for a specific position. But I think all these basketball coaches, they want their players to be such good defenders and all these other things. But like, even working on defense, there's only so much you can work on, you know, and even on offense, there's only so much you can work on. So like, at some point, you've got to go just work on your body. And I see this all the time. There's kids that literally, they just can't move in certain ways. So like, even just the body mechanics and the way their hips move and stuff like that has been, I've noticed it with a lot of kids that go here, then go over there. Mm-hmm. Like, Ollie's a good example. That dude can shift in any direction, and he can put his one foot in front, the other foot in front, jump off one, jump off two. And that has a direct correlation to what you guys are doing over here. So I think when kids come to this stuff, I think the biggest thing, just from the benefit of me as a trainer getting to work with them, is like, they're just more well-rounded athletes, and they move better, and they know more about their body. So if I say, hey, we have to do this crossover, but I need you to shift laterally, they understand like how to shift laterally. They don't just land. They actually move their hips in, and their ankle moves a little bit. Like, I think it's just body awareness, to be honest, and everything else too. But I think the more they know about their bodies, it's better, because it makes my job so much easier.
Right. And I think that's something too, a lot of weight programs, it's just purely weights.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yes, we do a lot of weightlifting here as well, but it's like, it's more specific, and we do a lot more athletic movement mm-hmm. type stuff. So yep. It actually transfers over to what you're trying to
100%.
Do. 100%. I had that conversation with a local quarterback coach here recently, yep. and he's like, you know, like, this kid that I'm sending you, he just needs to learn how to move like, you know, one of your other kids did.
Yep.
You know, and that's how you develop as a quarterback, that's how you develop as a basketball player. Yeah, I know 100%. We work with a lot of mutual athletes, and I think it's really cool how we can have, like, for example, we would have girls during the fall here
yeah.
finish up a workout here. They'd have a 30-minute break where they'd sit in Normatec and kind of chill out a little bit.
Then go hoop.
And yeah. then go hoop. And what's that like for you? Because I think it's awesome to be able to have it literally right next door.
Dude, you just – outside of the performance, these kids just love it. Like, and Sadie is the girl that – in Sydney, and amongst other girls that do that. But those two right now are the ones that will come right over after they mm-hmm. work out. And you see them like – they came from a sweat. They're happy about it, but they're a little bit tired. So they're eating their snacks. They're chilling. They're on their phone. And then they hop up and play basketball. Like, you think about that process of like becoming a better player. You just did it in 2 hours, you know, and you can do that consistently week by week. And like, what other way to do it than that? You know, we're literally a foot away from each other, and you can go get your workout with you. Then I can recover, rest, and then get my basketball. And then I can just go home. You know, I can get it done in those 2 hours. I think even pro players, they go out to LA, they do their basketball thing, and then they got to drive like 2 hours in traffic. And that's the biggest complaint I hear. They have to drive in traffic and then go do their workout, and then they never get any rest. They never get any time off. Mm-hmm. Having access to two high level people in an area like Sioux Falls, I think is super underrated. And I don't say that to, you know, boost myself or even you. I just think if you look at the industry of basketball and even, you know, athletic performance like you. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of industry leaders in the basketball world that maybe I looked up to, but at this point I'm like, okay, Shane, you're at that level. Like, you, when DJ came and did the camp, I'm like, dude, these kids know all this stuff, man. We already did this. And he was like, good, good, good. This is dope. Let's try some new stuff. So that to me, I'm like, okay, I'm up there. And I'm in Sioux Falls, which is rare, just like you. Mm-hmm. And I think these kids in South Dakota, I hate to say like they're lucky. I think there's a better way to say it, but it's like, what are the odds that you have mm-hmm. you and me next door, not only next door, but just like in this area mm-hmm. being able to do that. So I think us being in South Dakota, if I was a kid, and this is where my perspective's coming, not from another kid. If I was a kid and I had myself or you, oh my gosh, it's untapped. Like, as long as you put the work in and you're self-educated and you push yourself, you can really do what you need to do out of it. You can get your school paid for. You can have a good high school career. I think that's super rare. But going back to your question, like seeing Sadie and Sydney go sit down, and to me, just seeing them like they got a good session here, then they could leave my gym and have a good session, that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And it makes me happy for their families. You've seen, you know, Sadie's dad's probably coming here and said thanks, yeah. and his dad or their dad's coming to my gym and said thanks. And like, hey, Sadie's getting so much better. Like, that's super cool to me. Something that I love. But yeah, I think it's kind of rare that you have two guys like us that we're not just doing the job. We're like really trying to progress in the industry and learn more. I don't think a lot of people are doing. I think people get their job, get their business, and then they just I don't want to say coast, but just like, that's good. We were like, okay, how do I get better? How do I do more for the athletes? That's like on our mind constantly. So I think that's rare.
I think so too, because it's like, for me, it's like when I look at like a whole weekly routine, it's like Monday through Friday, it's the same. Saturday is the same. Like the only time I really have free to like myself where I'm not like actively engaged with training is like Saturday night. Everything else is like I eat, sleep, and rest it. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
bro. When you're consumed home, by it. It's the world you live in.
Yeah, and when I go home, I'm trying to research a little bit more, ask more questions. How can I figure out what's the next progression for this athlete and so on and so forth.
100%, man.
So I think it's kind of cool how we have athletes that bounce from place to place here next door. Katie is one of those athletes. What have you kind of seen her skill level transfer over this offseason?
Well, first of all, she's jumping high as hell, you know, like how that is crazy.
She's hitting 10 feet four. So
think about that. Think about how good that is for recruiting, though. I know she just signed to South Dakota, but like if a college coach, especially on the women's side, sees a girl that's 6'3 that can touch 10'4, instantly, outside of it, even if I didn't even see the basketball stuff, I'd be like, dude, okay, well, let me see the basketball stuff now because that's crazy. There's just not a lot of women's players in the world that are like that, you know. What I see out of Katie is a friggin' unicorn of an athlete. You know, like, there's not a lot of girls that can compete against boys at a high level. Like, I literally wouldn't be worried about her going. Even if I had a college, you know, group in there, I'd be like, Katie, hop in. Skill-wise, totally fine. She's better than all of them, probably. When we play one-on-one, fine. She'll figure out how to handle the contact. She'll compete. She gets hit in the head. She don't care. You know, she just wants to compete. So Katie is like what I would call a true, like, through and through gym rat. Somebody that's in here in the morning, somebody that, you know, will do whatever she needs to do. And then she's the one to actually ask questions. So, like, let's say, like, we get to, like, some sort of stop, right? We're taking two dribbles and we come to a stop. She would literally come up to me and be like, hey, Shane, could we also, like, we could get to this out of this, right? I'd be like, dude, yeah, we could. Like, I didn't even think about that, but I'm glad. Yeah. So her progression as far as her education on the movement stuff has been cool. And you could just tell she's about it. She really sees it. So yeah, she's a unicorn for sure. Right. And she's in South Dakota, which is wild. So
it's
very cool.
It's insane. Cause I remember when she first started with me back in May and she's like, well, I'm looking to do basketball workouts. Have you heard about this Hennin guy?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, go over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause we had like, you know, Sam Iverson in that group at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's like, yeah, go.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was a no-brainer. And I know what I see from Katie and Ollie are kind of the most notable ones just because they're playing at a high level right now. But just from what I've seen from the blend of skill development on the basketball side and then bringing up their athletic development as well this offseason, like, these two kids are going to have insane seasons.
Yes. Yes. I am very excited for them. And, you know, I know Ollie hasn't committed anywhere yet, but they're going to have very good college careers. And it sounds like Ollie's interested in the industry, in the field, and doing this is super cool. No idea what Katie's going to do, but it's just Katie's family is very cool. Her older sister is awesome, and her younger brother Ben is in the gym a lot too. So, yeah, I think Katie is, like I said, a unicorn of an athlete, like very special, very rare. And South Dakota State is, I think, did an awesome job recruiting, but is, you know, very lucky to have her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when we look at kind of like a weekly template, I know we talked about kind of like individual session.
Yep.
When we look at like a weekly template, I know you have an app out now.
Yep.
How would you develop like a weekly program for a player?
For a player? I think this is a good question. I think it depends on your situation, where you live, how close you are, what your access, what your financial situation is. But if you can get into the gym with a trainer in a small group, I would highly suggest that over an individual, because you can still get the detail, because our groups are 4-6. So you're still getting the attention, still getting the detail. And you can work on stuff out of your comfort zone, and you can play live one-on-one, which I think is super beneficial. So I would suggest, if I'm an athlete, to get 2 to 3 sessions a week with a trainer that knows detail and you're also in a good group. Then I would need to suggest that you also are, this is just from the basketball side, not your side, obviously. Right. I would also suggest going and working on like the I don't want to say fundamentals. I hate when people say this, but just like the very meat and potatoes of basketball. Am I hitting free throws? Can I shoot consistently? Can I just get my high volume of reps up? because I think when you go to see a trainer, you're working on stuff out of your comfort zone. Sometimes you don't get high reps. Sometimes it's stuff that maybe is a year out or 2 years out, but it's going to push me and to be more well-rounded. But now I got to go back and just get my stuff, which a lot of my athletes do. And it's a conversation I have with them all the time. Like, hey, I know you guys got open gym after or before school. How many shots are you getting up? They're like, well, we don't shoot. We just like warm up and we play. I'm like, okay, then that's my signal. We need to shoot more. We need to do more skill stuff. Or they'll say, hey, we're getting a ton of shots up already. Let's do some other stuff. So if I was looking at a week, I would say, and if you're going to go as many times as you can, I would say, hey, you need to get in with a trainer that can give you some detail work, that knows about you, that values you, and can take you on a good journey. But then you need to go work out yourself because there's a ton of value in that as well.
Right.
So those are the biggest thing. If I'm a basketball player, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing stuff by myself. I'm not paying a trainer to rebound for me. I'm not paying a trainer to do things that I can do by myself. I want to be pushed out of my comfort zone. I want to add new things. I want to have somebody that's in my corner, you know, understands my game, that is also, you know, pushing for me to get better as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Future goals and aspirations for head and workouts?
Oh, this is a good question. I feel like this changes for me so many times. You know, I would love, like, if I could pick an ideal situation, I would love to have a small group of kids that I work with at a high level, and they don't have to be great. I'm just saying I would love a small group that I have influence over. Then I would love to do camps regularly, but not too many times that would take me away from this, you know, from my groups, just because I can reach more people. I can teach them, and maybe I put them on a path to be more successful. Then I would love to have better online programs outside of just my app, but other things that I think I can teach coaches how to improve the practices. I think I can, like, I really think I can have an impact on basketball training as far as how we do it. And that's one of my goals on especially Twitter is to change some of that and to challenge some things and think about why we're doing things. And hopefully, and I have people that message me from like Australia, like, hey, we just saw your drill. We put it in today. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. So that is, I think, long term, I want to keep growing social, because then I can, you know, reach more people, and it can take some pressure off me being on the court so many hours. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I need a bunch of employees. I think I still want to be on the floor working with a handful of kids, but I know that if I really want to have impact, I can't work with 500 kids a week, and I can't be on the floor for 6 to 8 hours a day, because at some point I'm going to get tired and hungry, and the kids that are in that group where I'm tired and hungry are just not going to get the best of me. So finding ways to manage my time by still servicing a good number of kids in an effective way, and then also, you know, having online stuff where I can make an additional, you know, revenue, but also give value. Mm-hmm. I want to change the way we train basketball. I want to have an influence on that. So that's something I'm trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll probably have to have you on for part two here sometime in the future. But appreciate being on the podcast with me today. I think this will turn out really, really well.
Yeah. Hopefully let's drive some listeners, man. Let's get this thing going.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Shane.
Yep.